Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon, folks. Actually, it's kind of evening now because it's dark outside, but that's okay. It seems the left is really interested in destroying a Republican or a conservative with little to no evidence of wrongdoing. But when it comes to one of their own, they are mute and totally uninterested in that, and they're interested in other things. The truth has no meaning to these people who are supposed to be interested in the truth. From Breitbart.com comes this one. Beverly Young Nelson has finally admitted, and probably everybody's heard about this one, where she forged a portion of that infamous high school yearbook that she and attorney Gloria Allred used as proof of her accusations against U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore. To me, folks, this is a crime, and it should be punishable at least by a fine or preferably jail time, because in doing this, they tried to destroy a person's character and dignity, and this is despicable, and I am including attorney Gloria Allred in this one. She is a despicable human being. Nelson admits she did make notes to the inscription, ABC News tells us, but the message was all Roy Moore. Beverly, he signed your yearbook, ABC News reporter Tom Lamas says. He did sign it, she replies, and you made some notes underneath. Yes, Nelson says. And then after, a woman admits to forging a document used in a campaign to destroy Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in Alabama. ABC News quickly moves in on it as if it's not news of extraordinary consequence. But this whole idea that, and a lot of my show today is going to be about, you know, like CNN and their fake news and MSNBC and their fake news and how they hate being called fake news and what, you know, whatever. But this whole thing where they'll jump at something without any proof, they won't vet it, they won't do anything to try and figure out what the heck's going on, but they'll go ahead and run it with glee because they think they can destroy somebody that they are actually against. And as far as the accusation against Moore involving his wanting to date teenage girls, those are trumped up charges, utter nonsense. The age of consent in Alabama was and is 16. Moreover, 40 years ago, it was not at all uncommon in the South for a 32-year-old man to seek a much younger bride. So not only did Moore not break the law, he was not violating any social mores of the time. And with that, welcome to New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, and I am your humble host, Robert the Infidel Garding. I'm glad that you're here, and I have a friend of mine, Douglas V. Gibbs, is going to be with us today, and this is going to be a very interesting show, and we'll get started with the intro, and then we'll get to that.
Roger that. News sources that there is serious talk of Antifa having a nationwide
Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. At the rate our leaders are ignoring our Constitution, we're finding that they cannot lead, nor do they want to keep us safe from our enemies. And yes, we have some. From the crossroads of America, the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show is brought to you through the traditional American Patriot Network with the Doctor of this Republic, showing that the truth can be told to save this nation. And now, on with the show.
Okay, we are back, and we've got Douglas V. Gibbs with us today, which is a real treat, because he is one of the, right now, as far as I can have people that I know, he is one of the foremost authorities on the U.S. Constitution, and welcome to the show, Doug.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I was happy to be able to try and get you on here, because there's a lot of things that are going on today that I'm sure that you have some good comments to make. And I think I've actually read some of your stuff on the show over the past couple of weeks. And the lady who does my intro, she does a thing called Daily Roll Call. And I've read a lot of her stuff too, because she's really into the Islamic end of it.
But, well, you know, it's funny because people ask me about the things that are going on, you know, and I told them, I said, man, if I wrote a book about all the stuff going on, it'd be thicker than Obamacare.
Yeah, and that was pretty thick, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. For some people, it was a stool.
Yeah.
The kind you sit on, not the other kind.
I had heard,
maybe a little bit
I think sometime this week, that did Trump get rid of the mandate for that?
The mandate's gone. They're still, the taxes are still in place. They still got to, you know, do some work on it. It's kind of frustrating because the Republican Congress, who was, you know, so against it and willing to repeal it in one shot when we didn't have a Republican in the White House, suddenly they're gun shy. And like I was explaining to somebody today that I was in a meeting with, the problem is that while when it comes to the issues, they have some differences with the Democrat Party, when it comes to the actual machine, there really isn't a lot of difference. It's, you know, it's that establishment, and you know, they're both sides are feeding the machine. It's just one feeds it oats and the other one feeds it hay, but they're still feeding the machine. And you know, the Republicans want you to say, you know, want you to believe that, well, we're stuck with big government, but don't worry, we'll run it in a conservative manner, as if that's not an oxymoron. So, you know, that's what we're watching happen. You know, if it was up to me, you know, if I, you know, had any type of power, you know, that monstrosity would have been repealed in full, you know, day one.
Well, the thing that I've been, you know, and I've tried to push this a lot since actually the beginning. They, you know, when they had the House, they said, well, we don't have enough of the government to do this yet. You know, we need the Senate, and we gave them the Senate. And then they said, well, we don't have enough of the government, we need the White House. Well, the problem with that is that with them holding the House, they had the purse strings of the government. They could have repealed it right then and there just by defunding the dang thing.
Exactly. Well, the problem with the way Obamacare was written, though, is there was a lot of automatic funding mechanisms in it, and the Democrats put those in there on purpose. So while parts of it could be defunded, not all of it could, because of the automatic funding mechanisms that required that required a law to be passed to reverse them. So the Democrats knew what they were doing. And, you know, the way this the way Obamacare was written, in many ways, it will have to be piecemealed, you know, piece by piece, part by part. Now, that said, there can be a full repeal of the whole thing and you're done with it. But once again, the Republicans are gun shy. They're, you know, they've bought into two things. Number one, they've bought into the argument that all these people are going to lose their, you know, health insurance. And when they all had it, just had it through their states prior, but that's beside the point. And then the other thing is that government should even be involved. You know, instead of, you know, repealing it, they want to replace. And every time Trump even said repeal and replace, I cringed. It's like, no, there's nothing constitutional about the federal government being involved in our health at all. And, you know, repeal it, be done with it, you know, give it back to the states where it belongs. Now, if a state wants to have a safety net, and if they want to have a, you know, Medicaid or, you know, type system or Medi-Cal like we have in California or whatever, then so be it. But
that's legal. But, that can be done in the Constitution, but what the government did, there's nothing there.
Well, they've literally eliminated the state's ability even to have those programs. Now it all has to be through, you know, the Obamacare umbrella, and it's none of the federal government's business. And, you know, I'm one of those people. I'm actually an in-betweener. And what I mean by that is I make too much to get the subsidies for the health care, but I make too little to afford the rise in premiums. So what I had, I could no longer afford, and I lost it. Now, the only reason why I'm not paying the penalty is because I'm also a partially disabled veteran, and because I'm in the VA system, that allows for me not to get – it exempts me from the penalty because I do have health care. It's through the VA. The difficulty with that is the VA only takes care of my injuries. They don't – you know, I don't get general – medical through them.
Well, this last month, I think it was, it was in November, early November, last part of October, August, September, October, November. Yeah. Towards the last part of October into November, my wife had to have surgery. And she's got health insurance through her work and I'm really glad that this whole thing with Obamacare has kind of gone away, because one of the things that we found out this one, it was heart surgery. And that was a really expensive process. And her insurance paid all of it but $587, and it paid something like $93,000 on that. And to me, that was just amazing after all the stuff we've heard about Obamacare. you there?
Yeah, I thought I lost you there for a sec. Go ahead.
Oh. No, I had essentially finished, but
unfortunately, I'm on a cell phone on the road, and so. There's a possibility that it could get interesting. My wife's driving. I purposely gave her the keys, and she kind of gave me this look. So I could do this. She wanted me to drive.
Yeah, that's kind of, when I give my wife the keys, she kind of gives me that look too, because I usually do the driving.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, continue on.
You know, her insurance company through her work, you know, paid like $93,000 on that, which really blew us away. We didn't think they would pay anywhere near that.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because when back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when they talk about the Democrats started kind of pushing this idea of federal, you know, health care and socialized medicine. And then when Obama first took office, then after that, and the talk even intensified. And I was in communication with a friend of mine who lives in Toronto. And she and I got to talking. And I was, at the time, I was in the construction industry. The construction industry paid for my medical, but a very small portion of my family. And so I had my wife, myself, and my two kids on the on our insurance, and it was costing me almost $700 a month. It was in the upper six, like $685 or something like that. And wow. She's in Toronto, and she was talking about her government insurance. She says, you know, in the beginning it was great because, you know, we hadn't been taxed yet about it, but we're getting all those free services. But then what happened is after a few years, the government realized they could only afford certain things and didn't want other things dragging down the system, so they started to ration health care. And as that happened, supplemental insurance companies began to emerge in Canada and in Toronto. And so in order for everything to be covered, she had to buy supplemental insurance because it got to the point where the government health care wouldn't cover everything. And when she figured out how much more she pays in taxes for the socialized medicine plus the cost of her supplemental insurance, she was paying more per month than I was. So it goes back to the, you know, little saying, you know, you think, you know, health insurance is expensive now, wait until it's free.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like with her insurance is really cheap for her, but, she went and checked to see if she could add, our youngest, my stepdaughter, my youngest, to her insurance. And it would have cost her over, I think, $300 to add her daughter to it.
Wow.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I added her to mine, and mine with both me and her is only like about $109 a month. So, so it's actually really, really cheap for me, but it would have been expensive as heck for her. But I really don't think that my insurance would pay as well as hers does.
Well, you know, and you know, it's a frustrating thing because, you know, on the surface, if you're, you know, totally ignorant, you don't understand the consequences. The idea of free health insurance sounds appealing. You know, gosh, you know, I mean, everybody's struggling, you know, everybody's having their difficulties get through life, and it's just another cost that, you know, makes it difficult to, you know, and, you know, you worry about having the major, you know, things happen, and, you know, your percentage might be more than you can afford and all that. I get it. So from a purely ignorant point of view, I get it. It's a very appealing idea. But when you start to understand the cost and the consequences, and also the fact that what it does is it opens up the door for the government to have power over a number of things in your life. You know, that's when, you know, you start to realize it's not such a good idea after all. And might I remind people, when Adolf Hitler first ran for president in Germany, his primary campaign promise was free health care.
Yeah, and he actually had a whole bunch of things that would have made him a good leader if he wasn't so darned evil. But, you know, because I think he was the first head of state that implemented pollution controls on cities.
Right.
And
well,
and the
unintended consequences of stuff like that is where they get into trouble.
Yeah. And
because
they've
the
started realizing these consequences with Obamacare and
right.
A lot of the things that were going on because of that.
Well, you know, I live in California, and, you know, everybody in this country knows that, you know, if you want to see Detroit on a statewide basis, just look west. We're like, you know, we're like, you know, Venezuela Junior out here. But, you know, one of the things that they did years ago when I was in the trucking industry, I was in the construction industry for like 14 years. And during that time, I got a commercial driver's license, and I used to transport construction equipment with Big Rig. And then when the construction industry in 2008 fell apart, I began driving sand and gravel Big Rigs, and did that until 2014. So I did that for about 6 years. And while I was driving the sand and gravel, California passed a law that big rigs had to follow the same emission standards, or at least similar emission standards, to cars. And in order to be able to do that, new equipment had to be put on these big rigs. And it was required equipment by the state. It was the cost to put that equipment on the big rigs was about $25,000 per truck.
Wow.
And what it wound up doing is, number one, it increased the cost of transportation, because now this, you know, now there's an expense that these companies didn't expect to have. But also what it did is the owner operators, you know, the guy who owns his own truck, and the smaller companies couldn't do it. They didn't have the extra money. So most of them either went out of business, merged with larger companies, or they left the state. And what it did is it killed the little guy, increased the business for the bigger corporations, because now there's no competition and they're getting more of the business. And the unintended consequences was the exact opposite of what the Democrats claim. They claim to be for the little guy. They claim to hate the big corporations. Yet that one decision did the exact opposite of what they claim. It also increased the cost of living, because once again, everything's delivered by big rig. You know, so your cost of your milk, cost of your vegetables, you know, sand and gravel, whatever it may be, all of those costs went up because these companies, you know, they have to pay for it somehow. And, you know, it's like I explained to people, big companies, they really don't pay taxes. You pay the tax, because the consumer always pays for it, you know, at the back end through the, you know, increased cost of the product or service.
Yeah.
And, but see, and then people say to me, well, gosh, then the left really doesn't understand that. And so actually they do. The idea is to destroy the system, to bring it to its knees, destroy it. I'm a firm believer that they adhere to the Cloward Piven style idea of destroying the system so they can build it up in their own socialist image.
Yeah. that's very true. And, you know, that's something that I've talked about. But, you know, I think the media is complicit in this too, because they won't report the things that go completely against their darlings in government.
Well, sure. The Washington Post, in a recent article, actually admitted that the mainstream media's reporting is 91% negative about President Trump. 91%.
91%, yeah. I saw that.
You know, the Washington Post, you know, wrote that. So they're even willing to admit that. And then, you know, I was watching while I was at a restaurant for a meeting earlier today. And, of course, you know, we're in California, so, of course, CNN was on the TV, not Fox. And whenever I go to a business and they have Fox on, I find the owner and thank them. But CNN was on, and the headline on the screen says, you know, that false reporting is inevitable. And in a way, they're saying, well, it's the new normal. It's just the way it is. Tough, you know. There's going to be false reporting. Nothing you can do about it. Kind of attitude. I'm thinking, no, they're the news. It's supposed to be accurate. It's supposed to be fact driven, so on and so forth. And so I started looking into things. They haven't reported the fact that the current 4.1 unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in 17 years. They haven't reported that the number of unemployment claims is the lowest it's been in 43 years. They haven't been reporting that economic growth has risen steadily since Trump has been in office, and we're on the verge of a surge once we get some tax cuts. They're not reporting any of that good news. Once again, we go back to Washington Post, 91% negative.
Yeah, and it's like on Friday, one of the articles that I was going to talk about today was that Friday was, I think I got this one from Breitbart, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It said that Friday was one of the most embarrassing days for the U.S. media in quite a long time, and the humiliation orgy was kicked off by CNN with MSNBC and CBS close behind, with countless pundits and commentators and operatives joining the party throughout the day, and then turns out that everything that they were reporting was wrong. And
they had four major false reports in the last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was an article. there was an article that I found in someplace, I can't remember where the heck it was, but it said that CNN was caught with the wrong information seven times in 2014. I think it was, or 2017. I think it was a hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, and here's what, you know, blows somebody's mind. The voters out there, believe the media that Trump is some racist, fascist, crazy. They believe the media that all Republicans are racist. They believe the media of all the stuff they've been putting out. But if you ask them head on, you know, how much can you trust the media? They'll say, oh, the media, they're all a bunch of liars, so are politicians. Well, they believe they're all liars, but yet they believe them on this completely nutcase stuff.
Yeah.
It is absolutely amazing. And you know, and it goes back to, like, the I was reading a while back, and this surfaces continuously every once in a while, that, you know, Congress on average has anywhere between a 7% to a 14% disapproval rating, or approval rating, I mean. Approval rating of 7 to 14%. That's slow. But when polled about their own guy, the average is anywhere between 60% to 85% that they like their own guy. So in other words, yeah, the voters are out there saying, Congress is horrible, but my guy's okay.
Yeah. And it's always my guy, you know, and it's the same thing with me. You know, I don't like Congress. I don't like what they're doing, but my guy, my congressman right now is Todd Rafita. And he's pushing some things through that are pretty awesome, but you don't hear about it in the media. You don't hear about it,
of course,
on television or anything else, you know, because it goes completely against their story.
Well, my congressman is a gentleman by the name of Ken Calvert, and I've been very critical of him, even though he's, you know, supposedly a good Republican. He went into office in 94 during the Republican Revolution in the 90s with Newt Gingrich and all that gang. And he's been there ever since. And people say, well, gosh, Doug, why are you so critical of Ken Calvert? He's a good Republican. I say, well, he's a good Republican. That's not very reassuring. I don't want him to be a good Republican. I want him to be a good constitutionalist. I want him to be a good conservative. Just because he votes with the Republican Party most of the time isn't reassuring. His conservative rating went from 96% when he was first in office, all the way down to 38% at one time. He's just below the 50% margin right now. And I mean, I'm constantly hammering on him. He got upset with me because a couple times I've written about him and it got national attention. But you know,
I got a couple of those actually.
We have to hold these people responsible. And you know, when I go out and I public speak to groups, one of the things I emphasize is, first of all, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. In a democracy, it's real easy. You go to the poll, you vote, you go home, you kick your feet up, and you complain for the next 364 days. In a republic, it requires a lot more attention. You need to be informed. You need to be involved. You want to influence your representatives. Elizabeth Powell was the woman who Benjamin Franklin said outside the Independence Hall after the Constitutional Convention, when she asked, you know, what have you given us, you know, doctor, a republic or a monarchy? And he says, republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. That was Elizabeth Powell. Elizabeth Powell couldn't vote at the time, but yet she was very influential in keeping the republic by, you know, her relationships with the various people of the time period. In fact, she became very good friends with George Washington, and she was one of the key figures who influenced him on many of his decisions and convinced him to serve a second term. But she couldn't vote, but she was influential. She kept the republic, and keeping the republic is so important. And I feel like we have a society where, well, it's like the guy, you know, you walk up to, you know, you're talking to someone, he says, and you say to him, you know what? People seem to be ignorant and apathetic. And he says, you know what? I don't know about that, and I really don't care. that's the way people seem to be. You know, fact is, we need to be keeping our republic, and that means that we need to be involved in more ways than just voting. We need to, you know, follow the lead of people like Elizabeth Powell. Tell, you know, women's groups all the time when I go out to speak, you know, my favorite founding father is a woman, you know, and they cheer, you know, and it's Elizabeth Powell. We need to follow her example of being influential, and it goes back to Ken Calvert. You know, Ken Calvert, yeah, he's my guy. He's a Republican, you know, and he's, you know, this and that. And I like him better than the alternative. However, I've got to influence him. I got to make sure he does the right thing. The status quo and, you know, big government getting involved in things that's none of their business, I've got to convince him to vote against that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that would stop if people would just get themselves involved, you know, because I was once told that if you write to a congressman and they get ten letters against something that they're going to vote on, they know that there's a lot of people out there that are against it, because people just don't get a hold of them. And that, you know, that's one of the things I keep telling my kids.
And we have technology, man. Email them, phone them. You don't have to visit their office. I mean, visiting their office is awesome, but you know, we have technology. There's so many different ways that they can hear us if we would just be willing to bark out and make the noise.
Yeah, and it's like with my kids, and they're in school, and they're told something that. Say about Trump that they know because, of me being in the house, and I pretty much let them know what's going on, and if they hear something in school that isn't right, I told them, I said, speak up. And my youngest actually did. She heard something about Trump being really one of the worst presidents ever. My youngest spoke up in class and said, now wait a minute here. You're just going by what you're not hearing in the news, or what you're hearing in the news. What you're not hearing in the news is what he's actually doing.
I'm down to the final time period that I could be on with you. So if you don't mind, this last five or 10 minutes, throw some, is there anything constitutional? Is there any issues out there where you want the constitutional answer? And I'll come back on in the future, by the way. I love doing programs.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was the constitutionality of Obamacare. And you pretty much covered that one earlier.
Right.
About
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And there's nothing that gives them authority. And a lot of people, one of the things that people have to understand when it comes to constitution is it's a social contract. And when you talk about law and contracts, case law, precedent, living, breathing, all that doesn't a contract. And when you deal with contract law in the legal world, it comes down to one simple question. Either it's in the contract or it's not. So when it comes to authorities of the federal government, the first question we have to ask ourselves is that authority in the contract? I'll give an example. It's like the executive order the travel restrictions to the executive order that the Supreme Court, surprisingly, by a 7-2 vote, said, hey, the whole thing's good. And we had all these federal judges trying to strike it down. And the first question is, where in the Constitution does it give the federal court system the authority to strike down an executive order? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
Secondly,
no, huh?
Where does it give the, secondly, where does it, where in the Constitution does it give the federal court system any authority to enforce such repeals or takedowns of executive orders of laws? It doesn't. There's no enforcement arm. Matter of fact, the Worcester versus Georgia, when Andrew Jackson was president, Andrew Jackson dared the court. So John Marshall was still the Chief Justice at the time, and it's the now famous quote, Chief Justice Marshall has made his decision, now let's see him enforce it. It was a dare because there is no enforcement arm. The enforcement arm is the president.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that I'm constantly saying, is the judges, their job is to enforce the law, not interpret it. Isn't that right?
Well, no, they apply the law.
Apply the law.
Their job is to apply the law. Because, for example, the best way to explain it is, let's say you got a ticket for – we have what we call out here the California stop through the stop sign. That means you rolled through it. So we call that the California stop. Now, you got the ticket for it. You go to the judge, and the judge says, even though it says you have to stop the stop sign, I'm going to interpret the law to mean you can roll through it. So you know what? You're fine. And from now on, the law no longer means you have to stop. Everybody can roll through the stop sign. Well, that's not his job to do that. The law says you have to stop. You can't change the law through an interpretation. Okay, well, that holds true all the way across the board. he's supposed to apply the law. And applying the law says, well, the law says you have to stop. He applies that to the case. You're guilty. You didn't stop. It says you have to stop applying the law. You know,
yeah.
But, you know, instead of interpreting the law to mean, you know, whatever he wants it to mean. So that's really the key there when trying to understand the court.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for setting me straight on that one. I've been using the wrong word. I should have been using...
Yeah, apply the law,
apply.
Not interpret
yeah.
it. And when it comes to enforcement, that's the executive branch. You know, it says right there in Article 2, the president shall execute the laws of the United States. His job is to execute them. That's what the executive orders are for.
Oh, okay.
Now,
yeah.
That said, I am where I was going, so I'm going to have to let you go.
Okay.
But definitely have me on again in the near future.
Oh, I definitely will, and God bless you and your family, too.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Robert.
And you have a good day. Okay, that was Douglas V. Gibbs of the Political Pistachio. He does a lot of speaking now. I remember when him and I first met, there weren't too many people on Blog Talk Radio. I think he was one and I was another and Loki was another, and Loki's no longer around. He was a constitutional authority. He is somebody that I will definitely have back on the show because he knows what he's talking about. He knows the laws and he studies them. So that was a great thing seeing him on the show. And he was actually here when I got online to do the show. So right now you are listening to the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, and we will be right back after these messages of interest.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Vietnam was the war where American troops showed valor and bravery on the battlefield, but where the enemy was not only like ghosts in the jungle, but they were superstitious too. This gave rise to the Vampire Patrol, six men who fought the whole war together, spreading death, destruction, and vampire voodoo lore into the ranks of the Viet Cong. Now, years later, Matt Joseph works as a private investigator in Tucson, Arizona, while his best friend and former commander of the Vampire Patrol is chief of police of the South Tucson precinct. The job that gets Matt on the case is one that brings the Vampire Patrol back from the past and places it smack dab in the middle of the present, taking him to a small town on the Indian reservation called Luca Chukai in northern Arizona. There, a mountain named Root Butte not only holds mystery, but a cloud of fear that oozes out of it into the night sky. Matt is the one to find out what is going on here, and without becoming part of the nasty plan involved. Night Owls is the first in a new series of mysteries with Matt Joseph, Private Eye, and is on sale now at https://www.createspace.com/486-9187. This book is also available in digital form. That's Night Owls, Matt Joseph mystery by Robert P. Garding, and I approve of this message.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Detroit down to Houston.
Are you one of those people that the left likes to label as a dumb hayseed hick who believes in the Constitution, the Second Amendment, and freedom? Do you value your guns? Are you a traditional American patriot who is not afraid to voice your support for America? Do you wish that you had a way to get that patriotic message out? Do you dream of the day you can? Well, that day is at hand because Conservative Nation Media is looking for just such a person. Be a radio host for your very own patriotic venue to get your voice out on CNM. Choose your day and time, and presto, the left will go crazy because more of the truth they want hidden will get out. So do your part. Email us at conservativenationmedia2017@gmail.com to get started informing patriots like you who want their government to know that we know what is going on. That's Conservative Nation Media 2017, no spaces, at gmail.com. Then you can let the world know we will not be ruled.
I started to talk about this one while Doug was on the air. We figured Friday was one of the most embarrassing days in U.S. media in quite a long time. The humiliation orgy was kicked off by CNN, with MSNBC and CBS close behind, with countless pundits, commentators, and operatives joining the party throughout the day. By the end of the day, it was clear that several of the nation's largest and most influential news outlets had spread an explosive but completely false story to millions of people while refusing to provide any explanation of how it happened. The spectacle began on Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, when the most trusted name in news spent 12 straight minutes on the air flamboyantly hyping an exclusive bombshell report that seemed to prove that WikiLeaks last September had secretly offered the Trump campaign, even Donald Trump himself, special access to the DNC emails before they were even published on the internet. As CNN sees the world, this would prove collusion between the Trump family and WikiLeaks, and more importantly, between Trump and Russia, since the U.S. intelligence community regards WikiLeaks as an arm of Russian intelligence, and therefore so does the U.S. media. This entire revelation was based on an email which CNN strongly implied that it had exclusively obtained and had in its possession. The email was sent by someone named Michael J. Erickson, someone no one had heard of previously and whom CNN could not identify, to Donald Trump, offering a decryption key and access to DNC emails that WikiLeaks had uploaded. The email was a smoking gun in CNN's extremely excited mind because it was dated September 4th. 10 days before WikiLeaks began promoting access to those emails online, and thus proved that the Trump family was being offered special, unique access to the DNC archive, likely by WikiLeaks and the Kremlin. It is possible to convey with words what a spectacularly devastating scoop CNN believed it had, so it's necessary to listen to it for yourself to hear the tone of excitement and breathlessness and gravity of the network conveyed as they clearly believed that they were delivering a near fatal blow to the Russia-Trump collusion story. Now, this one is quite long, but if you will listen, you'll hear the excitement in their voices as it starts off with big letters announcing, "Breaking news."
Hello, everyone. I'm Kate Baldwin. More emails, more problems for Donald Trump Jr. and the Russia investigation. CNN has exclusive new details about a message sent in the final stretch of the 2016 campaign offering access to hacked WikiLeaks documents. A previously undisclosed effort to reach Donald Trump himself, his son, and his inner circle just weeks before the election. This comes, of course, on top of other new evidence. Other new evidence of follow-ups to the famous Trump Tower meeting between Don Jr. and a Russian lawyer. Follow-ups that he had promised when he had promised there weren't any. Let's get over to CNN's senior congressional correspondent, Manu Raju. Manu, there's a lot that you have gotten in the past day plus. Lay out your new reporting today on this effort to give Trump access to WikiLeaks documents.
Well, Kate, this email on September 4th, 2016 was sent to Donald Trump, then candidate Donald Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and others in the Trump organization, including Donald Trump Jr.'s personal secretary. And in this personal assistant, I should say, and in this email, it actually has a decryption code and a link to a web address where purportedly they could have received the hacked WikiLeaks documents. Included in this, it says that they could also receive the hacked Colin Powell emails, the former Secretary of State, whose own emails were hacked and were released 10 days later by a Russian front group. Now, the timeline is important here because on September 4th, that was after, a month after the DNC was hacked and after their own emails became leaked, and it was a month before Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's emails were leaked by WikiLeaks, and it was also a couple weeks before WikiLeaks was corresponding with Donald Trump Jr. on Twitter via direct messages. Now, the person who sent this email is someone by the name of Mike Erickson. We don't know who this individual is, and the congressional investigators themselves don't know who this person is either. But Mike Erickson sent this email to Donald Trump Jr. Saying that they could access these documents. And Donald Trump Jr. was asked about this, Kate, at the House Intelligence Committee's classified hearing earlier this week, and when he said he had no recollection of this email exchange. Now, the attorney for Donald Trump Jr. just put out a statement responding to our latest report saying this: we understand that the media reported 12 hours prior to this email that the DNC emails have been hacked or leaked. We do not know who Mike Erickson is. We have no idea who he is. We never responded to the email. But interestingly, Kate, on the same day that Donald Trump Jr. received this email was the first time that he appears to have tweeted about WikiLeaks. This is what he tweeted on that day, September 4th. WikiLeaks, Hillary Clinton sent thousands of classified cables marked C for confidential, including a link there to WikiLeaks. So Julian Assange himself has tweeted about our story also, saying it is not clear what this has to do with WikiLeaks. But I can tell you, Kate, this appears to follow a pattern of the way that WikiLeaks provides this kind of information, giving this decryption key and a website link. Whether this happened here, we don't know. And we also don't, it doesn't appear that the Trump campaign or anybody contacted the FBI after they received this email. They said they just didn't act on it and didn't respond, Kate.
And to be clear, Don Jr. says he doesn't recall seeing this email.
Yeah, he doesn't recall seeing this email. It says, and then his lawyer said he took no action on it. So that's where we stand right now. That's what he testified under oath.
So separately, but I guess all connected, there are these previously unknown follow-up emails after the Trump Tower meeting, Manu.
Yeah, that's right. As you recall, that Trump Tower meeting, we were told by the White House and by Donald Trump Jr., was all about Russian adoptions. It veered off in this unusual subject about Russian adoptions. There were people in the room that even though Donald Trump Jr. initially was promised dirt on the Clinton campaign, that did not happen, according to Donald Trump Jr. But we have learned that Rob Goldstone, who's a British publicist who helped arrange that meeting, sent some follow-up emails after the meeting and also referred to a topic that was discussed at the meeting that we didn't know about before, which was setting up a social media page under the Russian Facebook of sorts, called the site called VK, for Donald Trump, candidate Donald Trump. And that was sent to the senior White House aide, now senior White House aide, Dan Scavino. So uncertain how the White House responded to that, or Dan Scavino responded to that, because we have not gotten a comment yet from the White House. They declined to comment on that report, Kate.
All right, Manu, thanks so much for laying it out. I really appreciate it. Joining me now to discuss what this could mean, Asha Rangappa. She's a CNN legal and national security analyst, former FBI special agent. Paul Callen is here, CNN legal analyst. James Galliano, CNN law enforcement analyst and former FBI supervisory special agent. Great to have you all here. So, Asha, this new reporting that Manu has gotten exclusive to CNN and also laid out perfectly there about an offering to Donald Trump Jr., to Donald Trump himself, to access to these WikiLeaks documents with a decryption key in the email. From an investigative standpoint, what does this email mean?
So, to make it easy to understand, this email would be as if someone contacted you and told you they had robbed a bank and gave you the location of the storage locker where they had stashed the money and gave you the combination for the lock on the door. So even if he never responded to that email, from an investigative standpoint, I would say, why didn't he call the FBI? This is knowledge of potential stolen goods or stolen information. It's knowledge of a crime that could have happened, hacking. And so I think even just standing alone, before we even get into any of the other things, and there is a lot
that
Manu mentioned, this is problematic.
Okay, it actually goes a lot farther than that, but there was just one small problem with this story, and it was fundamentally false in the most embarrassing way possible. Hours after CNN broadcast its story and then hyped it over and over and over again, the Washington Post reported that CNN got the key fact of the story wrong. The email was not dated September 4th, as CNN claimed, but rather September 14th, which means it was sent after WikiLeaks had already published access to the DNC emails online. Thus, rather than offering some sort of special access to Trump, Michael J. Erickson was simply some random person from the public encouraging the Trump family to look at the publicly available, and you can remember this, publicly available DNC emails that WikiLeaks, as everyone by then already knew, had publicly promoted. In other words, the email was the exact opposite of what CNN presented at its a thing that the public didn't know. Now, how did CNN end up aggressively hyping such a spectacularly false story? They refused to say. Many hours after their story got exposed as false, the journalist who originally presented it, congressional reporter Manu Raju, finally posted a tweet noting the correction. CNN's PR department then claimed that multiple sources had provided CNN with the false date. And Raju went on CNN in muted tones, as compared to the excited tones of earlier, to note the correction, explicitly claiming that two sources had given him the false date on the email, while also making clear that CNN did not ever see the email, but only had sources described its purported contents. And that's on the next audio.
We are actually correcting the story that we have been reporting throughout the day today about an email that was sent to the Trump campaign, to then candidate Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and others during the heat of the campaign season. This email included a decryption key and also a link to where they could access some of these hacked WikiLeaks documents from the Democratic National Committee. Now, we've been reporting that this email came on September 4th. That was before some of these documents were publicly available, but we have just obtained a copy of this email. And instead, we now learned that this email was on September 14th. So that is 10 days later than what we originally reported earlier today. And this appears to change the understanding of this story, because initially it seemed perhaps they would be offered access to documents that were not yet publicly available. But in this email from an individual named Michael Erickson, they do direct the Trump campaign to some publicly available documents, hacked documents from WikiLeaks, as well as from the former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, saying that those documents are indeed available. Now, our initial reporting on that September 4th date was based on two sources who had seen this email, but that information was incorrect now based on a copy of the email that we have obtained this afternoon. So
Okay, but all of this prompts the glaring, obvious and critical question, one which CNN refuses to address. How did multiple sources all misread the date on this document in exactly the same way and toward the same end, and then feed this false information to CNN? It is, of course, completely plausible that one source might innocently misread a date on a document, but how is it remotely plausible that multiple sources could all innocently and in good faith misread the date in exactly the same way, all to cause to be disseminated a blockbuster revelation about Trump-Russia WikiLeaks collusion? This is the critical question that CNN simply refuses to answer. In other words, CNN refuses to provide the most minimal transparency to enable the public to understand what happened here. Now, why does this matter so much? This matters for so many significant reasons. To begin with, it's hard to overstate how fast, far, and wide this false story traveled. The Democrat Party pundits, operatives, and journalists with huge social media platforms predictably jumped on the story immediately, announcing that it proved collusion between Trump and Russia through WikiLeaks. One tweet from Democratic Congressman Ted Lieu, claiming that this proved evidence of criminal collusion, was retweeted thousands and thousands of times in just a few hours. Lieu quietly deleted the tweet after its falsity had been reported, and long after it went very viral without ever telling his followers that the CNN story, and therefore his accusations, had been debunked, I guess in hopes that the truth would all go away, letting the lie stand. Brookings' Benjamin Witt, whose star has risen as he has promoted himself as a friend of former FBI Director Jim Comey, not only promoted the CNN story in the morning, but did so with the word boom, which he uses to signal that major blow has been delivered to Trump, the Trump on the Russia story, along with a gif of a cannon being detonated. Incredibly, at this very moment, almost 24 hours after CNN's story was debunked, Witz never noted to his more than 200,000 followers that the story he so excitedly promoted turned out to be utterly false, even though he returned to Twitter long after the story was debunked to tweet about other matters. He just left his false and inflammatory claims uncorrected, again hoping the truth would go away and the lie would stand. Talking Points Memo's Josh Marshall believed the story was so significant that he used an image of an atomic bomb detonating at the top of his article, discussing its implications, an article he tweeted to his roughly 250,000 followers. Only at night was the editor's note finally added that the whole thing was false. It's hard to quantify exactly how many people were deceived, filled with false news and propaganda by the CNN story, but thanks to Democratic loyal journalists and operatives who decree every Trump-Russia claim to be true without seeing any evidence, it's certainly safe to say that many hundreds of thousands of people, almost certainly millions, were exposed to these false claims, with no taking back of it, saying it was false. Surely anyone who has minimal concerns about journalistic accuracy, which would presumably include all people who have spent the last year lamenting fake news propaganda, Twitter bots and the like, would demand an accounting as to how a major U.S. media outlet ended up filling so many people's brains with totally false news. That alone should prompt demands from CNN for an explanation about what happened here. No Russia Facebook ad or Twitter bot could possibly have anywhere near the impact as this CNN story had when it comes to deceiving people with blatantly inaccurate information. Second, the multiple sources who fed CNN this false information didn't find themselves to that network. Now, I'm going to be going off the air here, but the show will continue for a little bit because I've got some stuff to say here. They were apparently very busy eagerly spreading the false information as many media outlets as they could find. In the middle of the day, CBS News claimed that it had independently confirmed CNN's story about the email and published its own breathless article discussing the grave implications of this discovered collusion. Most embarrassing of all was what MSNBC did. You just have to listen to this report from its intelligence and national security correspondent, Ken Dillian, to believe it. Like CBS, Dillian also claimed that he independently confirmed the false CNN report from two sources with direct knowledge of this. Dillanian, I guess is his name, D-I-L-A-N-I-A-N, whose career is in the U.S. media continues to flourish more than he is exposed as someone who is faithfully parrots what the CIA tells him to say, one of the most coveted and valued attributes of U.S. journalism, spent 3 minutes mixing free CIA claims as fact with totally false assertions about his multiple sources with direct knowledge told him about all of this. Please listen to this again, not just the content, but the tenor and the tone of how they report, as it is a Baghdad Bob level embarrassing.
This is coming into our NBC newsroom right now. Congressional investigators are trying to figure out who sent an email that gave Donald Trump, his son, and others a decryption key for hacked WikiLeaks documents. I want to bring in NBC News intelligence and national security correspondent Ken Dillanian. Ken, tell us what we've just now learned. I know you and some of our colleagues have just confirmed some of this information. What's up?
That's right, Hallie. Two sources with direct knowledge of this are telling us that congressional investigators have obtained an email from a man named Mike Erickson. Obviously, they don't know if that's his real name, offering Donald Trump and his son, Donald Trump Jr., access to WikiLeaks documents. This was about September 2016, right in the middle of the campaign when WikiLeaks was putting out some documents, hadn't put out other documents. Remember, the Russians had hacked the Democrats and handed this stuff over to WikiLeaks. So the issue here is congressional investigators do not know whether this was a legitimate, real overture from WikiLeaks. But one of the sources told me they presume that Robert Mueller knows and can get to the bottom of that through the technology and the intelligence resources he's got at his command. But if it was a real overture from WikiLeaks, obviously it raises a host of questions. It goes to the heart of the collusion question, right? Because WikiLeaks was essentially acting as an agent of Russian intelligence, publishing hacked emails that hurt the Democrats and helped Donald Trump.
And Ken, Donald Trump, and I want to bring in Zeke Miller and Alana Shore, who are with me here, and stay as part of the conversation there, pal. But Donald Trump loved WikiLeaks on the campaign trail. He talked about him again and again, despite real concerns from members of the intelligence community that that was a huge mistake. This seems like a significant development.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the president, now president, then candidate Trump, you know, encouraged WikiLeaks to hack Hillary Clinton's emails out of their offer server. But the question is, you know, who was this actually from? Was it legitimate? Is it from WikiLeaks? And then also, what, if anything, did the Trump campaign and people around Donald Trump do with it?
Right, what was the
response? Did they ignore it? Did they open the email? Did they click the link? Did they download these emails?
Ken, do we know? Do we have any guidance on that?
No, we have asked, and we are awaiting a response from Donald Trump Jr.'s lawyer. And right, one of the big questions is, did they call the FBI, for example?
Right.
They haven't done that in other cases where overtures from Russians came in, you know, offering incriminating information by Hillary Clinton. But you're absolutely right. That is a huge question. We're trying to answer it right now.
And keep in mind, Hallie, only one of three congressional investigations into Russia is really functioning right now. Mm. And that's the Senate Intelligence Committee's investigation. The House is a partisan mess. The Senate Judiciary Committee has become a partisan mess, in large part over whether to bring in Donald Trump Jr. and subpoena him over this exact question. So Donald Trump Jr. is about to come into the Senate Intelligence Committee any day now. And this is
we don't know when yet.
We don't know when yet, but it's kind of a political tinderbox on the Hill right now over him and this exact issue.
Now, Donald Trump Jr., Ken, has already come. We saw him just this week coming over to speak with House investigators.
That's right. And we are getting the Democrats on that committee, to speak to the point of your other guests, are very dissatisfied with how that eight-hour interview went. They're saying that he didn't recall answers to key questions, and they are frustrated that the Republicans are not allowing them to subpoena the documents that they feel they could confront him with to get better answers. You know, and he cited attorney-client privilege in one aspect of this where the Democrats didn't think it was legitimate. So It's really true that that investigation is breaking down.
Zeke, final thoughts. Where does this go?
It goes to Robert Mueller. It's up to him now. That falls in his court.
Falls in his court for sure.
Okay. And that was, on that one, that was you could hear the excitement in that voice, in those voices. We are 5 minutes past the time that we actually are here to run this show. But we are at the end of the show now, but I'm glad that that the people who will hear this, because having Doug here today was really a treat for us. And I really hope that people hear this, because this one was a good one. CNN, the media, was caught in a horrible lie on Friday, and they continued with the amount of people that caught that lie but did not catch anything else, you know, like being told that what was going on was not true, that they didn't announce that one. But they sure announced what was going on really hard and fast. Want to give do a couple of ads here that I normally do before we end the show. So we will do this. So we'll get a couple of messages and then I'll bring the show to a close.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
The leftist media would like conservatives like us to think we're just a few lonely voices in the wilderness. But don't be fooled. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by a 2-to-1 margin, according to numerous polls, even those by the liberals themselves. If you respect traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericamovement.com, or TradAM as we call our home. Traditionalamericamovement.com is a place where real conservatives can meet up without turf wars and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, find out what's happening, and be a part of the conservative revolution, all on Traditional America Movement, all one word, .com. And that's www.traditionalamericamovement.com. And I hope to see you there soon. TradAM is a liberal, free website. And you are listening to New Wise Conservatism radio show, brought to you on Blog Talk Radio through Conservative Nation Media. The call-in number, as always, is 646-478-5284. And we will now get ready to end the show. You've been listening to the New Wise Conservatism radio show. NWCR is expanding. We had our blog, which now has almost 200,000 hits on the counter and two authors. We started this radio show back in late 2007, and we have done videos and audios until last year, when we started to expand by combining the two into the new NWCR's audio video side chats, which is a rush type daily update that is done on Facebook Live Monday through Friday each week. Some of the subjects that are breached on the updates the media would call controversial, but controversy to the media means the truth is there. They don't want it to be. And with the updates, the truth is there. So there is no controversy there unless you ask CNN or one of them. Then on Sundays, you have this show. So NWCR is now almost a daily event. Stay tuned for more as we strive to bring you the news that you deserve without the fluff of the lies and distortions from the lying, lamestream media. Listen in daily on Facebook Live for NWCR's audio video side chats, and please share. It is a great way to do what the president does, by passing the lamestream lying media and going straight to the people. And as a good friend of mine used to say, we will not be ruled. We wish to thank you all for coming to the show this week, and next week we will be back again for your conservative news no one else in the media wants to give you. But that is what we are here for. During the winter months that have arrived here in Indiana, NWCR will be actively looking for other shows that want to join the Conservative Nation media family, and our normally two-hour show will just be 1 hour for the winter, to be restarted with 2 hours in the spring. So until next week, we will leave you with this little thought. If you want to hear the truth about what is going on here in America, stay away from CNN, MSNBC, and others. Look to the sites that I use: Newsmax, Conservative Tribune, Daily Roll Call, Political Pistachio, Wise Conservatism, and others. We can win this battle that has been brought to us by our representatives in government and our own media. America is not the bad guy here. The left, the terrorists, the media are along with the illegals. Time to go to war and put a stop to all of them to make America great again. Then the next thing we need to do is get rid of all the Republicans that won't do what they were put there to do, period. Have a great week, and I will see you all again next week, same time, same channel, with more of the news the mainstream lying media won't touch. Again, we will not be ruled. And as always, have a good day.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start a ring. Is raining down on you. I'll brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
God bless you all.